Last week, Woody Harrelson told us about his new film, The Messenger. Now we have part two of his interview with Fresh Air contributor Dave Davies. For 8 seasons, Harrelson played a lovable and naive bartender in the TV series Cheers. Then he made the films White Men Can't Jump, Indecent Proposal, Natural Born Killers, Kingpin, and The People vs. Larry Flint, which earned him an Oscar nomination for Best Actor. He moved to Costa Rica for a while to flee celebrity, then settled in Hawaii with his family and took 5 years off from acting. He's become a vegan and an outspoken advocate of environmental causes. But he's back in movies. He had a memorable supporting role in No Country for Old Men, and he's now in the comedy Zombieland and the drama The Messenger, in which he and Ben Foster play soldiers assigned to tell family members that a loved one has died in action. Let's start with a clip from his first scene on Cheers. The scene starts with Ted Danson as Sam Malone.
What, did you say you're looking for work?
Well, actually, I came to Boston on a fact-finding tour. See, I tend bar back home in Indiana. Well, it's not a bar exactly. It's more like a pigsty with a jukebox. If we had a jukebox.
Carla, I'd like you to meet Woody Boyd. Woody, this is Carla Tortelli.
Hi, ma'am.
Ma'am? What's that supposed to mean?
I believe it's a term of respect.
I wonder it sounded so weird.
The character that you played, Woody Boyd, was sort of this lovable, naive hayseed from Indiana. And, you know, it occurred to me that you got this huge role at a pretty early time in your acting career. Not like you didn't pay some dues. I know that you did, you know, plays in New York, but you had a lot more success in your 20s than a lot of people did. And I'm wondering if being in Hollywood then, you grew up in Ohio, I guess, and playing
Texas and Ohio.
Texas and Ohio, right. And that being in Hollywood then and having that role, were you a little wide-eyed like Woody Boyd?
Yeah, I suppose I was. I was, I just turned 24 when they started. I was 23 when I auditioned for it, but it was right just before my birthday. And then, I don't know, doing it, I got to say, I didn't have the full realization of, well, I'm replacing this beloved character. I mean, I kind of knew that, but I hadn't watched the show, so I didn't really know, you know, that much. I think it would have been a lot more of a daunting task had I been watching the show. But certainly, I remember standing back off stage waiting for that red light to go on, and, you know, I could hear the dialogue and I could tell it was getting closer, and then boom, the red light goes on and I'm entering into the bar in front of a live audience, and obviously a show that's going to be seen by a lot of people. So it was pretty... I was nervous, I gotta say, but thankfully, you know, I'd done enough theater in college that I think it really helped me get through that.
After Cheers, you made a transition to movies in a way that not that many TV actors do as successfully. And one of your early films was White Men Can't Jump, and I thought we'd listen to that. I think it really put you on the map as a movie actor, and I thought we would listen to a clip from that. And this is you and your co-star Wesley Snipes. I mean, those who know the film know that you guys are basketball hustlers. You go onto playground and provoke games and fool people and take their money. And in this scene, you're about to compete with Wesley as a partner in a two-on-two basketball tournament, and you suddenly start talking trash to a couple of guys on the court whom you might have to play later. Let's listen.
Hey, chump. Yeah, you, potato head. You know who I'm talking about. Is that the best game you got? Because if it is, you better just grab that free t-shirt and head home.
Yeah, man, what the hell are you doing, man?
You hit, who'd you bring over here? Mighty Mouse?
Oh, man,
you know
wrong,
something? You're
wrong.
Too pretty to play basketball. You know that?
Look,
you got that big Z in your fro, man.
Come on, would you stop already?
Hey, man, what are you, the Black Zorro?
Oh, man, look, that's enough.
Hey, no, seriously, hey. You get your hair cut at the Braille Institute?
What the f*** is Opie Taylor talking about
get
anyway,
about
huh?
It.
Opie Taylor? Opie,
okay,
hey,
okay,
I got your
on.
Opie, you big, bad, gomer pilot, droopy-eyed son of a bitch.
You and the cream and wheat man, yeah. Take your ass back to Mayberry and tell Aunt B she better have my bean pies or I'ma kick her ass.
What are you doing?
Hey, lurching more tissue? What are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing two things.
What? What are you doing?
I'm making them mad. Most guys don't play good when they're mad.
Look, you know you're embarrassing me. That's what you're doing.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing I'm doing.
You know, you're not embarrassing me. You are pissing me off. That's what you're doing.
Well, good, because unlike those guys, I assume you play better when you're mad. Am I right?
I'm not listening to you.
Yeah, but you are hearing me.
And that is my guest, Woody Harrelson, with Wesley Snipes from the movie White Men Can't Jump. A lot of fun macho trash talk there. But you know, a character really different from Woody Boyd on Cheers. And, you know, I have to say, when I think of a Woody Harrelson role, what I think of is a guy who brings enormous self-confidence, just not a moment of self-doubt. I mean, the kind of guy that could start trash talking on the basketball court. Is that closer to you than this naive kid from Cheers?
You know, maybe somewhere right in the middle. I don't feel as confident as that. I don't remember. Well, I guess I do some trash talking, but you know, I guess I feel a lot like that character, Billy Hoyle. Yeah, I guess so.
Well, let's talk a little bit about The People versus Larry Flint. This was a role that got you an Oscar nomination. I mean, Larry Flint was, of course, the publisher of Hustler magazine, who was shot and paralyzed from the waist down. I believe the assailant was never actually caught. And you played him in this film about his battles against censorship, as well as it's, you know, a profile of his very interesting life. I thought we should listen to a cut here. In a way, you kind of had two – there were sort of two roles here. I mean, you had to play the Larry Flint before he was injured and the one after. And the one after, the gunshot wounds affected his speech. And in this cut from the film, you've just come back to Hustler magazine after being either in jail for contempt in one of the court cases or in the hospital. I'm not sure which. But you've come back to the magazine and sort of taken charge. Let's listen.
The pervert is back. The pervert is back.
Circulation is down by a third. Color reproduction is horrible. Models look like they're $3 whores. The writing is by some moronic idiots.
Mr. Flint, I don't want to step on your toes, but things have changed since you were actively running the company. I mean, I look back at the stuff you did in the 70s, and it was sort of racy and crazy. But the country's different now. Reagan has rebuilt America, and the moral majority is gaining power.
You're fired.
Excuse me?
You get the f*** out of my building, Doug! Get him out of here! Need to blow-dry jerk. Take him out of here, throw him in the incinerator, cut him to little pieces, and feed him to the animals out there. Get out of here!
Larry, you can't do that. I mean, he's our vice president. He's the VP of marketing.
Hey, Jimbo, are you trying to challenge my authority? You see that on the wall? LFP, that's Larry Flint Publication. Not JFP. Okay, I'm the big kahuna here. Do you have a problem with that?
No, Larry. You're the boss. So, Larry, what's the plan?
Plan is simple. The establishment took my manhood from me, but they left half of me. They left the half with the brain, and I'm going to use it to get back.
And that's my guest, Woody Harrelson, making his mark as Larry Flint, the porn publisher in the film The People versus Larry Flint. Tell us, what interested you about doing this film?
Well, you know, when they offered it to me, I was I kind of had a similar opinion most people had, which when they heard it, they said, well, why would you want to do a movie about this guy? And yet, you know, they were, and Milos Forman was going to direct it, so it really seemed like something you got to pay attention to. So I went and met with Larry, and my feeling was if I didn't like him, I just wasn't going to play the part. But I was kind of amazed by him, you know. He's a brilliantly funny, interesting guy who likes to stir things up, and yet, you know, whether or not you agree with what he does, he's a kind of a fascinating character. So I was glad to get time with him. And then when we started to make it, there was a lot of work to be done because the script just needed a lot of work, and there ended up being a lot of improv in it, and that was fun listening to that scene because that was my brother in that scene. He played Jimmy Flint.
Do you identify with Larry Flint in any way? I mean, you're both people who sort of aren't afraid of stirring things up and setting your own course.
Well, I think probably during the course of it, he kind of activated me more. Just for having played him, it made me, you know, it was after that that I did things where I had brushes with the law and so forth that, you know, probably I never would have done that.
Maybe you should explain what you mean by brushes with the law.
Well, for example, I was upset by the fact that there was no distinction made between hemp and marijuana, where I think in a free country you should be free to grow whatever, but I'm not going to pretend this is a free country. But however, I went to Kentucky, and along with my buddy Joe Hickey there, we kind of set up this thing where I planted hemp seeds and got arrested. And then the concept of it was to go to trial, which we ultimately did, and hopefully the jury would see the distinction between the two, and you know, farmers would be free to grow hemp, which you can use for paper or clothing, or you know, it's a sustainable material. So that's what ended up happening. And doing things like that, or climbing the Golden Gate Bridge, I don't know if I ever would have done that kind of thing had I not played Larry, just because it made me look at things differently. Before, the thought of getting arrested was just an impossible thought, and I would never intentionally do that. And after playing the part, I looked at it as a way to kind of get my point across, you know.
Right, because Larry Flint, in fact, actively provoked the authorities, and including insulting judges in courtrooms at times. We should mention that the you mentioned climbing the Golden Gate Bridge. That was, to string a banner protesting the eradication of redwoods, right?
Yeah, we were protesting the logging of the ancient redwoods in Northern California. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure we helped any, but, you know, we tried to bring some attention to it.
I read, too, that there was a time when you were having a rough time with Laura Louie, your wife, although then I guess you weren't married. And you spoke to Larry about it, and I think he even might have spoken to her.
Yeah, Larry took it upon himself, unbeknownst to me, and called up Laura and got together with her and actually was giving relationship advice because I guess he considered her, you know, being my wife comparable to what it would be like to be Larry's wife. I'm not sure why. But it was one of those incredible, you know, things a true friend does, you know, that you just, I was really grateful for that. And I think it did help.
Do you want to share the advice he offered?
No, not at all.
People who know you well know that your father, who I guess divorced from your mom at an early age, was imprisoned. He was convicted of killing a federal judge. And I know that you had a relationship with him and visited him in prison and tried to help him get a new trial because you felt that it did not have a fair trial, died 2 years ago. But it's interesting to me, as I've read what you've said about him, that he was a charming, well-read, really interesting guy. And it struck me that, you know, one might say a lot of those same things about you, and you're both guys who aren't afraid to break some rules. Do you feel like you're like your dad in some way?
Well, I guess you could say, you know, they have the saying, the Japanese, there's some kind of Japanese philosophy that when you're born on your father's birthday, you're not like your father, you are your father. So I don't know. I remember hearing that, and it's kind of interesting one time. And I do think that there are a lot of similarities. I think he had a much different kind of sense about what he needed to do to make money in life. And who knows what would have happened to me if I hadn't fallen into acting. So in that sense, we might have been exactly the same. But fortunately, I ran down this alleyway. And what about him? You know, he was an incredible guy in many ways, and, you know, he did a lot that probably nobody could be proud of, but so be it. You know, I still loved him, and it was really sad for me that he died in prison, and we never got to go hang out and have a beer together and, you know, just shoot the without being on telephones or having things monitored, you know?
Mm-hmm. You had a stretch for a few years where you weren't making films, right? You've made several recently. What made you want to take some time away from movie making?
Well, I mean, a part of it was after Larry Flint and this whole debacle where the movie was kind of destined to do quite well, and then a whole campaign against it destroyed any chance of that, and the studio at the time didn't really fight it. They just kind of let it go. And it was really devastating because that movie meant a lot, and myself and Ed Norton, Courtney Love, and Milos, we put tons of work into that and tons of ourselves into that. And that was kind of a devastating blow. Also, I'd done movies back to back to back, and I was not enjoying it. Like, this is a job you should be enjoying. So it was a good opportunity to do another important thing, which was, and the most important of all of it, which was to hang more with my family. And so that's what I did. You know, we moved off grid and out of sight and just had a ball together. So one of my better decisions. I didn't think it was going to be 5 years, but I thought it would be a couple, 3 years. And then it was just fun. And, you know, I'll say this, I'm a good worker and a hard worker, but I'm a world-class vacationer.
Good to have that talent. Yeah. well, are you having fun with the job again?
Oh yeah, I'm really enjoying it now, and I've just wanted to make sure that every movie that comes along, I just try to do my very best, and also that the movie has every chance of being great. And in this case, with The Messenger, I think it's the best movie I've been a part of. I think it's truly great, and Oren Moverman is like a young Hal Ashby, and he just truly, you know, one of the most visionary directors I've ever worked with. And Ben Foster, I think, delivers just this searing, beautiful, eloquent performance. And it's great to be a part of it.
We're about out of time. But Woody Harrelson, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure being on your show.
Woody Harrelson spoke with Fresh Air contributor Dave Davies. Dave is a senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News. Woody Harrelson stars with Ben Foster in the new movie, The Messenger.